Hello everyone and welcome to the first TSFP of 2023. Happy New Year to all our dear listeners. Hello Sydney, Happy New Year.
Hello Phil, how are you?
You sound like a man who has been forced to record a podcast and is sitting in his car on New Year's Day, Sid.
I'm a man who spent quite a lot of the day on the phone to Telefonica trying to fix a router that doesn't work. Yeah,
yeah, you do. That's exactly what you sound like. Let's take your mind off these technological issues by talking about some Spanish football, should we?
Good idea.
We're recording on Sunday. It is New Year's Day because we had match day 15 played across Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. Here's what happened. The first game back after the seven-week break for the World Cup saw Girona and Rayo Vallecano play out a thrilling 2-2 draw at the Estadio Montilivi. Then Betis and Athletic Club played out a slightly less thrilling 0-0 draw at the Benito Villamarín. Atletico Madrid got a much-needed 2-0 victory over bottom club Elche. Elche being still being the only side yet to win in La Liga this season. Then on Friday, Getafe and Mallorca played out a game that will not live long in the memories of many people. There weren't that many people there. Sid was one of them. He did see Getafe win by 2-0. Celta Vigo won, Sevilla won. Sevilla stay in the relegation zone, and they're still not very good. Cadiz and Almeria also played out a 1-1 draw, and Real Madrid won 2-0 at Real Valladolid. And then the final games of the year, the Barcelona derby. There was a football match played. There were two teams involved, but it was all about the man in the middle, the referee, Mateo Laoz, stealing the headlines. We'll talk about him in a minute. It finished 1-1 between Barcelona and Espanyol, but Mateo Laoz doing what he does so often. Real Sociedad beating Osasuna by 2-0. What a year they have had. What a year. They start 2023 third in the table. And Villarreal returning to the Estadio de la Cerámica, where they haven't played all season because of renovation works. It looks great from the outside. And it looked pretty good on the inside as well for the home fans, because they saw Villarreal come from 1-0 down to win 2-1 against Valencia. Sydney, let's start by talking about that feisty, fiery Catalan derby between Barcelona and Espanyol. I mean, we'll talk about the football in just a second. But Mateo Laoz, I didn't think anything would perhaps top his performance at the World Cup in the Netherlands-Argentina game, but this came bloody close.
I'll tell you what, we have said repeatedly over the last few years that we don't like talking about referees. Right. But it is absolutely inevitable. And he's genuinely the outstanding performer of the first weekend back for La Liga. And I was thinking this morning and just kind of thinking, wow, who thought that the star of the World Cup, that who would come back and say, "I'm still here, everybody," was going to be the man who doesn't actually play. It was a quite extraordinary performance from Mateo Laoz, whose name is not just a name anymore, it's a verb, isn't it? To Mateo Laoz is to completely take centre stage and to dominate proceedings. And I think, you know, one of the things that I've heard a lot over the last day or so is that he really ruins things. And I mean, obviously at this point, my tongue is wedged slightly in my cheek, right? But he doesn't ruin things. He makes things much more exciting. He makes them much, much better. There's a nice match report in AS written by Santi Jimenez, and Santi is a brilliant man and makes me laugh enormously and very much a joker. So I can sort of imagine him enjoying himself doing this. He said, you know, this was a New Year's Eve party. It was going to be really dull. And then along came Mateo Laoz, and he's a dance floor filler. You know, he's the man who gets everyone up and dancing, gets everyone going. And he kind of really did. And there was a moment, I think just about a little bit before the additional time at the end. And by the way, as you know, because I love doing this, I've done the numbers for you. And I'm going to go through the numbers. I'm going to go through the numbers with you in a minute because they are hilarious. There's a bit before, just as we're getting into additional time, when the commentators on Spanish TV, including the very lovely Gaizka Mendieta, who we both have worked with and is brilliant, and they're talking about how, you know, this is what a derby is all about. You know, when people say, "What's a derby?" This is a derby. And I must admit, I was thinking, it's not really a derby. It's nothing to do with it being a derby. It's to do with it being my tail off. I mean, this is genuinely one of those moments. And forgive me if I'm laughing, because, you know, up to a point, there's kind of a serious element to this, and we should be saying this is terrible. But actually, it was very funny in a very stupid sort of way.
It was wild.
It was all about the referee. It really was. It wasn't a good game. It wasn't an exciting game. It wasn't even that much of a dirty game. It wasn't particularly tense. And yet, it ended up with, what was the total? Was it 15 yellow cards? And
I think it's 16. 16 in total. Yeah.
16 and two reds. Officially 16 and two reds. It was actually 16 and three reds, but one of them got taken away again. It was just an extraordinary performance.
From the referee, from Matteo Lauth. And as you said, we do not like talking about referees usually, but we're making an exception today.
Yeah, because it was so good.
Give me the numbers then. You said you'd done the numbers.
Right. Yeah. I mean, there was a little period, right, when he just totally and utterly lost the plot. And I think this is the thing about Matteo Lauth, is that I don't think it's about the decisions themselves and about whether they're right and whether the justice has been done. And this is a little bit, has a parallel to my argument with VAR, which you know, we've discussed loads of times. I always think it's not really about whether it's right. It's about the impact it has on the game itself and, you know, what sort of happens to the match, right? So ready for this, right? Yellow card on 74-23, right? Two yellow cards on 74-58. Yellow card on 75-30. Yellow card on 75-58. Yellow card on 76-13. Yellow card on 76-56. Which brings with it a red card. Two yellow cards, well, actually one yellow and one red, on 79-34. And that red card is then taken off. And get ready for the numbers here. I've just said 79-34. That red card is then taken off on 84-29. Right? So basically, what is it, 5 minutes later. During which time, of course, nothing has actually happened. Now, as you know how I love to do the ball in play thing, just to demonstrate the madness of this period, right? So between 74-23... and 74-39, admittedly, then wait another 5 minutes for that card to be taken away. In that period, which is just over, just over 5 minutes, right? You can take it to 10 minutes if you want to have it taken off. You get eight yellows, one red, another red that's taken away, and ball in play, 31 seconds.
Wow.
And you know, I shouldn't be laughing, but it was really, really funny. You get eight yellow cards, one red, another red taken away. Here's the other way of looking at it. And this is, I think, the point. And this is kind of the point about the whole thing about Matteo Lauth and in that sort of sense of him losing the plot. OK, so Barcelona have eight cards in the game, right?
Right.
One of them is for a foul. One of eight. Espanyol have eight yellow cards in the game. Four of them are for a foul, right? So in other words, of 16 cards, five are for fouls. Five are for things that you really would give yellow cards for. The others are for a referee who basically has lost control. And one of the things that makes this interesting, I don't know if interesting is the word, and I apologise the fact that we've been going on about this, and I apologise too for the fact that I'm finding it so amusing, is that Matteo Lauth kind of made a name for himself as the guy that would talk to players and would let the game go. And this is the complete opposite of that. It's him totally losing the ability to deal with anything. And there's one that really stands out for me, and that's the card that he gives to Ferran Torres. Now, the reason this stands out, I think, is because the TV camera is on him, right? And so because it's on him, I don't like saying this, and I don't like making these kind of value judgments, and I've defended Matteo Lauth lots of times. But you watch this bit of footage, and it's only about 3 or 4 seconds long, and it says to you, that's a referee who wants to get a yellow card out. So Ferran Torres goes down and the camera gets on the face of Matteo Lauth and he's staring at him. And he's waiting for him to say, oh, come on. And the card is out so fast and so premeditated, in my view. And as I say, I feel unfair saying that. And it probably is unfair saying that. But you watch the way he behaves. And this is supposedly your referee that's a guy who likes dialogue, who likes to talk to people. And it's the complete and utter opposite. And it's what happened in the World Cup with Holland and Argentina. So the last two games he's refereed, he's given out 32 yellow cards, right? In those 5 minutes that I've already mentioned to you yesterday, he gave out as many red cards. Sorry, in yesterday's game, he gave out as many red cards as were given out in the whole of the World Cup in one game.
I mean, it's just insane, and it's sort of funny, but it does also really damage games. And there's another thing that I just wanted to point out, another one of my ridiculous count the minutes thing. He gave 10 minutes of additional time at the end of the game for a game that was stop-start because of him, not because of the players. Now, you could argue he can only give fouls when there's a foul given, all the rest of it, but he kept stopping and starting the game. He's the one who, when the game is stopped, will then go and have a chat with someone and kill more time. He's the one killing the game, not the players. This isn't about it being a derby. It's about him. So in that added time, 10 minutes, 3 seconds, ball in play, 4 minutes, 55. Now, you might say that's not too bad, but that's half of the additional time is not played. And it's not because Espanyol wasted time, although they weren't hurrying over goal kicks. Of course they weren't, because they had a result that would be really good. It was because he kept on stopping the game to go and have a word with people. Mm. Just stop it. Just get on with it. And this reminds me of something, and I realise I'm sounding like I'm going on a rant now, but I was sort of amused at the same time.
You are,
time.
But it's okay.
This reminds me of something, and correct me if I'm wrong, because it's possible that I'm wrong, because I haven't had the time to double check this today, but I'm going to go and do it in a minute. There was a moment earlier this season, about probably just before the World Cup, so 6, 7, 8 weeks ago, when Sergio Canales was sent off for something. Mm-hmm. And he came out after the game and he said, "It now seems we can't talk to Mateo Laoz." He says, "Well, if that's the case, don't you come asking me about my family. Because you come along playing all pally-pally, matey-matey with the players, and then as soon as someone says something, the card comes out." And if you look at the official match report yesterday, because the referees are forced to write what the reasons are, right, for sending people off. Are you ready for these? I really quite like this, because I think it says something about how low the bar is set for a yellow card. So the first one is for a foul. The second one is for arguing. It says, "Without ever insulting or threatening." The next one is for arguing with an opponent, by the way, not with him. "Without ever insulting or threatening." If two opponents are arguing, but no one's calling anyone a name, and no one's threatening anyone, and no one's confronting anyone, they're just saying, "That's a foul, no, it's not, oh, come on, mate, it's a foul." Why are you getting a yellow card out? Then the next one is for protesting one of my decisions. The next one is for protesting one of my decisions. It's like there's no suggestion that anyone's saying, "What kind of decision is that, you absolute twat?" It's someone just saying, "What have you given? Oh, come on, that can't be a card." Or, "Oh, come on, that can't be a foul." It just seems like the bar is ridiculously low for the referee who was self-styled as the man who let people get on with it. And he's doing the total opposite. Anyway, rant over. And although it sounds like I'm angry, I actually quite enjoyed it.
That was quite something, Sid. We've been doing the pod for 10 years. I don't think we've ever started by talking about a refereeing performance, but I don't think we've ever seen a refereeing performance quite like that. Certainly never seen or heard you quite as passionate in describing a referee's game. But there we go. Let's actually talk about the game, because you said it wasn't a brilliant game. Yeah. Marcos Alonso giving Barcelona the lead before Joselu levelled things up with a penalty in the second half. It wasn't a great game. It's not a great result for Barcelona. Did they deserve anything more from this game?
Yes and no. So they deserve more in the sense that they had far, far more of the ball. They had far more opportunities. I think it was 20 shots to 4 by the end of the game, of which I think not that many were on target, actually. I think about 6, maybe 7 were on target. I haven't got the statistic in front of me. I did have it earlier. Espanyol had 4 shots, only one of them on target, which is the penalty. So Ter Stegen doesn't have to make a save. Well, he has to make one and doesn't make it. Fernandez makes 2 really good saves. And the save that he makes low down there in his post is an absolutely brilliant save. A really, really brilliant save. Very similar, actually, to the one that Courtois had made for Real Madrid at Valladolid the night before. So in that sense, do Barcelona deserve more? Yes, because they made a lot more happen. They had a lot more of the weight of the game. They had, I think, the highest percentage of possession all season. And yet, at the same time, it was a kind of flat performance, wasn't it? They didn't make a huge amount happen. There wasn't a huge amount of flow. There wasn't a sense of an intensity or a pace to the game that they would have wanted there to be. And so in that sense, I quite liked Xavi Hernandez's response to this post-game, because he was asked repeatedly about Mateo Laoz, which of course is not surprising. And he said, "We lost. We didn't lose because of him. We lost." And I think he's right. And I think the performance wasn't good, but it was certainly good enough to have won that and to have won it comfortably.
They are still top of the table on goal difference ahead of Real Madrid, having started or restarted the season 2 points ahead of Real Madrid. Real Madrid, who beat Valladolid by 2 Karim Benzema goals to nil the evening before. You watched this, by the way, didn't you? The Valladolid Real Madrid game?
Yes, I did. Yeah. I watched. This was a curious weekend because the way the games were distributed, I actually managed to watch pretty much everything on telly except the first half of Celta Sevilla because I was at Getafe.
Ah, okay. Well, you missed Sevilla be absolutely bloody awful in that first half. A real shambles. But yeah. Back to Real Madrid and that victory over Valladolid. It wasn't a particularly inspiring performance from Real Madrid, who started the game pretty well, but then Valladolid really got into it. Two late goals from Karim Benzema, has to be said. A penalty on 83 minutes and then a second, very nicely taken goal on 89 minutes. Wasn't a particularly brilliant performance from Benzema, who looked a little bit sluggish, but still managed to come away with two goals. What did you make of this game from Real Madrid?
Well, the fact that you've asked from Real Madrid, I think, sort of changes slightly my answer because my answer was going to be I was actually very impressed with Valladolid. I thought kept possession really well, created chances, caused problems for Real Madrid. I didn't think Madrid were particularly good. I didn't think they moved the ball particularly fast. They didn't create a very significant number of chances. They obviously got the breakthrough with a penalty for a handball. They might have had a penalty earlier in the game for a handball, which I think actually is even clearer than the second one. But I think both you and me have pretty much thrown in the towel now in terms of the handballs. For me, both of those are handballs. End of story. There just isn't a debate for me in either case. But I recognise that there are refereeing experts who will be able to make a case and say they're not. And that just doesn't make sense to me. But there you go. That's kind of by the by. I thought it was interesting that Ancelotti tried to freshen up the midfield with Dani Ceballos, who's a fantastically unusual footballer to watch in that he looks kind of clunky because his knees and his ankles seem to be slightly locked. So he moves in this slightly clunky and old-fashioned sort of way, but he's very nice with the ball. Maybe didn't create as much as he would like. Vinicius wasn't, I think, able to escape his marker as much as he would like. And Fresneda, who's the guy he was up against, was watching him earlier in the season. I can't remember which game it was now. I went to Valladolid about 3 months ago and talking to Pacheta afterwards, and Pacheta was saying, this guy is really, really good. He's going to be a really good player. And I thought he played very, very well against Vinicius defensively. And what's striking about that is he's been a player who's been a kind of a fullback that stands out because he attacks well, because he crosses well, because he makes things happen. But this time he kind of went man to man with Vinicius and largely stood up to him. I thought Madrid were not great, basically, is the short answer. I thought they were defensively a little bit open as well. I thought they didn't seem as, shall we use that great word, contundente, as usual.
Yes.
What do you call that? I've never found a good translation for that. But they weren't sort of decisive in the way that they cleared the ball. They didn't get rid of it as quickly as they should. I thought they invited some of the problems upon themselves. And fundamentally, I thought there was a period of the game when they were, I wouldn't go so far as to say overrun by Valladolid, but there was probably a 20-minute period where I thought Valladolid were very clearly the better side in possession, in creativity, in understanding exactly what it was they were trying to do.
It reminded me a little bit of what we've seen from Barcelona this season, in so much as they have been very strong in both penalty areas, with Ter Stegen making brilliant saves and Lewandowski scoring the goals. We saw Thibaut Courtois be absolutely superb and makes a couple of unbelievable saves, and then Benzema scoring it at the other end. So without necessarily being brilliant, when you're good at both ends of the pitch, you can come away with a victory.
Exactly. I mean, obviously, you know, this is one of those cliches that gets trotted out in Spain about the being good in the areas wins you matches, and of course it does win you matches. But we sometimes forget that the football pitch is actually quite big. And so you've got to be able to get into the areas to be good in the areas. But yes, I fundamentally would agree that they're more decisive in those areas than sometimes their play suggests. Just a quick word on that Thibaut Courtois save, by the way. We often talk, don't we, about goalkeepers having a strong wrist or a strong hand, that when they make a save, they don't just get the hand on it, they push it away. You watch his save in slow motion. I didn't fully appreciate it the first time round. And it's the strength of his fingers. He only just reaches with fingers. It doesn't hit his palm. It hits his fingers. And somehow you actually see the fingers move in the glove. Sort of the fingers push it out. And I realise I might be kind of banging on about a minor detail here, but I was really taken by that. I was like, oh God, I mean, I don't know. Has he got sausages for fingers or something? It's just incredible, I thought.
Yeah, no, he doesn't have sausages for fingers. Can confirm he doesn't. No. But he is very good at making saves. And despite really having, you know, an underwhelming World Cup, as the whole of the Belgium squad did.
He did, yeah.
Good to see him back in action. But as you said, Real Madrid made to work hard by a really, really very well coached Valladolid side, who should be all right in terms of relegation this season. Let's move on and discuss some other stuff as well. I did actually want to talk about Sevilla. You didn't see them in the first half. You saw them in the second half against Celta Vigo when they improved a little bit. They took off Youssef En-Nesyri and brought on Eric Lamela, and he was very important in them getting back into the game. But that first half away to Celta, they were 1-0 down. They could have been more down. They were absolutely abysmal. Yes, they were missing a number of players. I think they had 9 players out, 3 suspended, 6 injured. But still, it was not good enough. And we've been wondering this for a while now. Are they too big to go down? And watching them the other day, or 2 days ago, I was struck by how clearly I saw the answer. No, they're not. They're not. They're not too big to go down. They can. Yeah. They can. Yeah. They don't have players who are used to being in a relegation battle. They are not mentally experienced in what you need in these kind of situations. You know, other teams in and around them have got much more wherewithal in terms of avoiding relegation, and I think they're going to really struggle. And I wouldn't be surprised, Sid, if we saw another managerial change there.
Yeah, no, funnily enough, I was thinking that as well, that the there's something about Sampaoli and the situation they're in that sort of doesn't feel entirely convincing. Now, obviously, it's too early to be blaming him, but you're in a position where you need the response relatively quickly. And all right, there's still more than half a season to go, because, of course, it feels like we're further down the track than we really are. Because in January, start of a new year, it should be roughly halfway through the season, but they're 5 or 6 games off that halfway point because of the World Cup. But they are not very good, and there isn't a sense, I don't think yet at least, and I don't know how long you can be patient, of there being an idea that pulls them out of this, or an identity, or a kind of, if you like, a thing that they can do differently that they weren't doing before that will get them clear. Now, obviously, what should still get them clear is the quality of the players, which I think actually is maybe not as high as we think, but there's enough good players there that it should be. But I look at it and I don't see, for example, you know, take what's happened in recent years with Iago Aspas. You know, a Celta team that's not very good, but you sort of always feel like Aspas at some point will pull them clear. Who's the player at Sevilla that's going to do that? I sort of don't see it.
I've no idea. And yeah, I wouldn't rely on any of these guys to pull them clear.
A combination of them should be good enough, because there's talented players in that team. But it doesn't really feel like it. I mean, you know, the standout player...
Bono.
Yeah. And he's your goalkeeper. Admittedly, he's a goalkeeper who's scored before, but he's your goalkeeper. I mean, to kind of put this into context, and I don't want to overplay this, but let's slightly overplay it to make the point. In the second half, the person who kind of got closer to making things happen than anyone else was Acuña.
Acuña, yeah.
And you know, Acuña's a bit of a lump. You know, he's not a terrible lump, and he's a world champion, so let's not knock him too much. But it was really striking that. And all right, it was a game that was very, very windy, and it did feel a little bit like the game hinged on them changing sides and the wind being kind of in Sevilla's favour in the second half. But it's not good at all.
They've played 8 games under Sampaoli now, so they've played more games under Sampaoli than they did
I didn't realise it.
Under Lopetegui. And they've only won one of those, Sid. Just one.
Yeah.
And that was that 1-0 win at Mallorca, where the only goal came from Gudelli, who struck the ball from 40 yards
from
out.
Nowhere.
It's really quite bad. And they remain in the relegation zone. And let's see if and when there is some kind of reaction. We spoke about Villarreal as well, and their desire to have some time to, or the manager's desire to have some time to work with the players. Quique Setién coming in just before the World Cup break, not immediately impressing, but having 7 weeks to work with his team and seeing them beat Valencia by 2-1 yesterday. I think Valencia were pretty good in the first half. Villarreal just about managed to hold on, and then in the second half they turned things round. Did you notice anything noticeably different about Villarreal? Did we see Quique Setién's effect, the fact that he's had 7 weeks to work with these players?
I can't claim that I did. That's not to say there wasn't anything different. It's perfectly plausible that I didn't see it because I didn't see it rather than because it wasn't there. Mm. But there's nothing that really stood out to me. I mean, obviously, the return of Gerard Moreno will be really important. And, of course, he plays the pass, or one of the two really good passes for the goal, which is brilliantly taken, by the way. The touch and finish is really, really good. He also misses an absolute sitter at the very start. It's definitely the worst miss we've seen this season. It might be the worst miss we've seen in maybe a decade.
It's the worst miss I've ever seen.
It was really...
Like, watching a live match, like sometimes, you know, things pop up on Twitter where you see, oh my God, look at this. But in a live match, I've never seen a miss like that.
No. It's like, what? Hang on. Yeah. And you sort of want to go back. Just show me that again. Is that really what happened?
Yeah.
He also, I thought there's a chance that he takes on the edge of the area and tries to bend into the corner. It actually results in a really, really good save from Mamardashvili. But I think that Gerard Moreno should be taking that first time. And I think he scores if he takes it first time. And so I was struck by that. But I do think his involvement is a good sign. I think he's the player that Kike Setién most trusts in. But no, look, I can't watch that game and say to you, I can see something having shifted in these last 5 weeks.
Okay. While I've got you, dear listener, can I tell you about our Patreon page, patreon.com/TSFP, where we produce lots of bonus content. We do a Q&A podcast every Tuesday. We do a bonus podcast every Thursday or Friday. There's the TSFP Presents series as well that we do twice a month. There's the Discord. There's Al's paper reviews. There's a lot of content on there for just €4 a month. We're also doing annual memberships now. And if you sign up for an annual membership, you get 10% off. Lots of people have done that. So get involved. patreon.com/TSFP. We've spoken about football. And if there is something about football that we haven't spoken about and you want us to, drop us a question and we'll answer it at patreon.com. We have to mention more racist chanting, Sid, in the Via the Lid game.
Yeah.
And Vinicius went off.
You're genuinely going to have to guide me on this because on the television, while I could see that they were shouting at him, I didn't hear racist abuse. And there's a clip that's going round on Twitter of them booing him, but I wasn't sure that it was racist abuse, but he has come out and said so, and of course he's the one hearing it most clearly, and you know, he's the one that's the victim of it.
Yeah, there is a clip on Twitter which I was sent, and I listened to it, you know, 3 or 4 times because all I could hear was cabrón and hijo de puta, but then in the background there did seem to be people making some kind of monkey noise.
Okay.
I listened, it took 3 or 4 times, but it did seem to be there. And it's just very sad that we're talking about this again.
Yes,
Valladolid have put out a comunicado oficial saying that they will work with the league, anything that they need. They will work harder to try and make sure that these kind of things don't happen. But here we are again, and I'm not sure what to say or where to go from here, but it's happened again.
The thing to point out, I suppose, here that is significant is Vinicius's suggestion that the league aren't doing enough, and actually I think I can see his point on this, because obviously the initial reaction was always like, no one's ever doing enough if it keeps happening. You know, it's something you always feel like you can't do enough of, you can't do enough about. And obviously, there's only so much you can do in the sense that people will still behave like total assholes. But the question is how quickly you respond to it and how you respond to it. Now, the league's point of view on this is that they have, what's the word I'm looking for? Sort of observers in the stadium that are there for precisely this reason. They put together a report after every game at the end of the round of games. That gets handed on to the anti-violence committee. Then that gets handed on in theory to, what would you call it? The authorities, I suppose. The courts is a perhaps an overblown way of saying it, but you know, onto the authorities for investigation. And La Liga's point is that is what we can do, which is to hand it on to authorities that are bigger than ours. And I think this is something that happens a lot in Spain, that there is always another body, if you sort of mean. And what Vinicius's point, I think, forces us to reflect upon is actually that question that says, okay, and that is, it's sort of true that the league is doing what it can do within those frameworks, but actually, why isn't it possible for the league to say, okay, it doesn't matter what the authorities above us say, we are going to act. So we are going to say, no, that's it. There's a stadium closure or a ban, or we will use your cameras and we will find the person. And I must admit, it's a it's a slightly difficult area because I think, for example, the one, was it Iñaki Williams? I can't remember who it was now, in Granada.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was Iñaki Williams. And the league provided the footage of the person who did it and identified him and passed that on to the authorities. And as far as I know, that guy was going to end up in court on a charge of, what's the actual phrase? There's an actual phrase in Spanish, it escapes me. It's not hate crime as such, I can't remember exactly the wording. But anyway, you know, charged for using, for racially abusing someone. And so on that sense, okay, so that is the league being very proactive. I think there probably is an argument that says, could the league, even beyond those other bodies above them, actually say, you know what, we're going to do it. And yeah. And if the difficulty then, of course, becomes, then what happens if the clubs appeal and then you get back into the whole process again? And of course, that is a general thing in Spain, that there's always seems to be another stage. And we saw that a little bit, Robert Lewandowski playing this weekend. There's always someone else you can go to. And I suppose that's where part of the weakness comes. But it's clearly something that, and on one level I sort of celebrate this, even though it's very sad. It's clearly something that Vinicius has decided he is going to push, and he is going to take, and he is going to follow this through. And I really hope that people follow him, and that it becomes something that provokes some genuine change, because a lot of players would make the first complaint and then kind of back away because frankly you get tired of it. Frankly you think, well, why should I be the one fighting this all the time? But Vinicius has clearly decided, I am going to force this through. And I really hope that he gets the support, and I really hope that it has the impact that he wants it to have.
Yes, absolutely. Like we said, had to mention that because it has happened again, and every time it does happen we will keep talking about it. We're coming to the end of today's podcast. Before we go, there's also something else that we had to talk about, or really wish we didn't, but some very sad news that came out yesterday. Anyone who watches La Liga TV will be familiar with the work of Simon Hanley, our colleague, presenter and commentator, who died yesterday after a short battle with cancer. Yeah, it really was quite quick and quite shocking for everyone who knew him, and just wanted to pay tribute really to his work at La Liga TV, both in front of the camera and also off the camera. He was instrumental in getting La Liga TV set up, and he was instrumental in bringing me in. From a personal perspective, I'm always be very, very grateful to him. He was the one who called me to offer me work there. And just reading some of the messages, the tweets that were replying to the tweet that La Liga TV put out, it was clear that he was really, really quite loved and respected by the people who watched and listened to him. I mean, streams and streams and streams of nice comments about how people enjoyed listening to him, enjoyed his work, and how he enhanced La Liga for a lot of people around the world. So that's really been really, really very nice to see. And I think it sort of just underlines how much of a football fan he was. He loved football. He really loved football. He loved La Liga. He loved Spain. Loved Newcastle United as well. And it's really very, very sad and difficult to assimilate, as it is always with when someone dies, that you're not going to see them again, you're not going to hear them again, you're not going to bump into them again at work again. It's difficult. Infinitely more difficult for his family and his close friends, to whom we send our best wishes. But yeah, I know a lot of people who are listening to us watch La Liga in the UK, Ireland and Africa, where La Liga TV does go out. And he was a very familiar figure, voice and face to people. And I think it's going to be a big loss. And yeah, it's going to take a while to get over.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing you can say that's remotely adequate. You sometimes, in these kind of situations, you sort of don't really know what to say, and you're aware of the limitations of what you can say, but I think the thing that you've picked up on is really quite striking. I spent quite a lot of yesterday just kind of reading what people had said on Twitter and reading the impact it had on people, and you're right, that's you know, does it provide comfort? Yes, it does. It's maybe comfort's not the right word, but it was actually really nice to see that these were people who felt like Simon was, you know, kind of part of their La Liga experience, that he was very much the voice of their La Liga coverage and for quite a while, and they felt a degree of warmth towards him and a degree of having shared some of this with him. And I remember having this conversation with Michael Robinson, who of course passed away a few years ago, and him always talking about at the risk of cliche, and he always was aware that, you know, at the risk of cliche, he says, you know, these people allow me into their living room. You know, they allow us into their living room and they share some of these experiences with us, and we are part of their kind of lived experience of something about which they are enormously passionate, in this case Spanish football, but you know, the same is true of other sports or football from other countries. And I think that was actually, I spent quite a lot of yesterday actually reading those messages and sort of thinking, I don't know what I can add that's adequate. I don't know if I even should add anything that's adequate, but you're right. That I think it was important for us to, I don't know, to say goodbye and to say to his family that we're sorry, and there is nothing beyond that that you can really do except for what people have done, which is to kind of celebrate what he did and celebrate the impact that he had and celebrate the fact that he really, really liked Spanish football, and that we all really, really like Spanish football, and you know, we can kind of go on enjoying it the way that he did.
Absolutely. So thank you for listening to us and, you know, listening to us talk about someone who, you know, you might not have known, but we did, and we felt it was important to say that. That's it for this week's edition of TSFP. We'll be over at Patreon for the rest of the week if you need us. Happy New Year, amigos, and, you know, go out and enjoy life. Adios.
Cheerio.